Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we welcome you to another edition of Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This is part two of my two-part interview with Dave Biesing. If you missed part one, after you listen to this, go back and check that out. I have a feeling you will, because he's a fascinating guest. He's very articulate and very insightful. He is a longtime radio programmer, also a radio consultant, and he is now involved in podcasting and research and, you know, a lot of things. And we're talking about terrestrial radio, satellite radio, streamers, Spotify, podcasting, music, the state of the music industry, the state of the broadcast industry. It's really interesting stuff, and it changes by the day. So if you want to stay up on what you're listening to and how you're listening to it, this is the guy to listen to. Dave Biesing, part two, coming up right now on Hollywood and Levine. Right-wing radio dying, finally.
I think right-wing radio listeners are dying.
Enough. I'll get
letters for that.
Howard Hoffman, please edit.
I'm going to get angry emails at HollywoodLevine@outlook.com. I used to listen to your show, and then you said something that was so... Yeah, go on.
I think that it is slowly. It didn't, not to again be crass, but the death of Rush Limbaugh contributed greatly to that as well. You still got Ben Shapiro and some others going that are quite successful. But they tend to be on AM radio. I'm not sure it would be helped that much if they were more on FM, although that's probably going to happen increasingly just as FM loses its music position to streaming. But I think the demographics of that are definitely aging. So you have less and less of that. People,
you know,
ask,
I knew Rush Limbaugh from the beginning when he started.
In Sacramento?
From Sacramento, and then when he got his national platform, and he was a very different guy. He was very much a radio guy, and he was an entertainer.
Right.
And he even recognized this as an act.
Yes.
I remember him saying to me, all of this talent, you know, on loan from God and everything. Who buys that crap?
Yeah, right.
You know, so it was all just this act at the beginning, and eventually he morphed to where he started really believing it.
It's kind of like the old Colbert character when he had his show on Comedy Central,
right?
Except that he started to buy in. If Colbert had started to buy into his own act, I knew someone else who knew him early on. In fact, was a college roommate of his who said the guy had no interest in politics whatsoever. He was an entertainer. He was a funny person. I put him on as a program director on KRMG in Tulsa, Oklahoma in the 80s when he was just starting to take off. And I will say that his success there got me a gig in Detroit. So the leap of the week in the trades. So thank you, Rush. But I justified it in my own mind. Back then, it was a very different show. He was, I didn't agree with his political stance, but he was hilarious. He was very funny. I listened to all 2-3 hours or whatever it was because he was very entertaining.
Yeah. What formats do work well
these days?
Mm-hmm.
Nielsen has a, with that PPM, does have a tendency to pull everything to the middle, to the mainstream. I think the music formats are gradually in decline as well because of streaming and other choices. I don't know. You've really stumped me there. I think...
All Christmas music, all year long.
Well, you know what? It would be a difference. It might actually work. I think what we were talking about in Canada with personalities and everyday part, it's going to have to go to that in some way, shape, or form. It's the long tail. So it's kind of a catch 22 also, to mix metaphors, in that you have to target more and more to exist on the long tail. You have to have a narrow format that someone can't get anywhere else. And to do that, you're throwing out the mass appeal nature of things. I do think, and there was just an article this past weekend in, was it the Washington Post or maybe it was the New York Times, about analog, nostalgia for analog, whether it's vinyl records or it's going to the movie theater and actually sitting in the theater and eating popcorn or what have you. That there is some nostalgia for some of the, it did not mention AM and FM radio, sadly. But I do think if you put a great personality on AM and FM, someone who was unique and you couldn't get anywhere else, then nobody cares whether it comes in on AM, FM, satellite, streaming, whatever. You get into a new car these days, you don't know what the heck you're listening to. It's just all in the dashboard. So AM and FM eventually won't necessarily be penalized because it's AM and FM. It's going to be on the dashboard along with everything else, much to their chagrin. But it does, they do need to step it up and get with the program, as many of them are trying to, with on-demand offerings, because the technology is going to have to keep up as well. You can't start a show at 2 o'clock and end it at 5 o'clock and expect that your whole audience really wants to hear it between 2 and 5 and doesn't want to rewind and is going to listen to 8 minutes of commercials and all of that.
Now there's internet radio stations and they can provide those niches. You know, it's like I can have a radio station of all Vicky Carr. 24, I don't know why I would, but I could. And I guess the thing that holds people back is they have to pay royalties. The royalties are pretty expensive, so much so that my guess is just a normal individual, you know, living in his apartment or basement can't afford to have the All Vicky Carr station.
Or it, as your listenership to the All Vicky Carr station goes up in listenership, so do the fees, because they're based on how many people heard.
Well, that won't be a problem with the Vicky Carr.
Just in theory, if there were an audience increase, the way those royalties have to be paid is you keep track, your electronics keep track for you, and you've got to file the reports and so forth and so on, of how many people heard it when you played Vicky Carr's version of, I don't know, what's a Vicky Carr song?
It Must Be Him.
It Must Be. That was her biggest hit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you play, how many people were listening to It Must Be Him, and you pay by the number of people who are listening at that time. So that's why the Spotify's of the world have shifted emphasis greatly, not entirely, but to podcasting, because if somebody wants to create a talk program for them and throw it on their service, then Spotify can sell advertising in and around that and so forth, and not worry about those music licensing fees.
You mentioned Sirius XM Radio. Mm-hmm. They're doing well?
Yes, they're, I don't know their financials, but they are growing. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when Howard Stern eventually someday retires, although he's got so much stuff in the can, the archives, that I suppose he could work a deal with them to work one day a week or whatever, or not even that, and just let them play the archives for decades, and it would be entertaining. But no, they're doing very well. The other one to keep an eye on that's finally, after many years of existence, really kind of starting to get a groove is TuneIn Radio. TuneIn kind of started, I think it started in Dallas as kind of just a streaming platform, an aggregate streaming platform for local radio stations. And okay, they still
so
have
you
a
can
lot
find,
of
it. You can go to TuneIn and you can find the station you want to listen to in Tulsa or right. in Detroit.
Yes, absolutely. And you can still do that. Of course, you can do that on the iHeart app if it's an iHeart station, or on the Odyssey app if it's an Odyssey station, formerly Intercom. These are different companies for those that are not in radio. They tend to have their aggregate apps as well, and some of them are also on TuneIn. But TuneIn has also gone out and bought the rights to Major League Baseball. They've bought the rights to a lot of the professional sports, and you pay an extra fee to be able to listen to that, much as you would a tier of programming on your TV to be able to watch all the NFL games on Sunday or what have you. So you can tune in to not just, otherwise you would not be able to listen to your old play-by-play team, the Seattle Mariners. You wouldn't be able to listen to that on TuneIn and just on a regular radio station coming through TuneIn, but they have the MLB rights so that they have the Mariners games all the time on the TuneIn app. They're not restricted by the deals that the major leagues made with their local stations.
You might get more people listening to Vicky Carr.
And you might, you might. And you get MSNBC and CNN and Fox News and a lot of those things that have also found their way to SiriusXM. They're on TuneIn as well. And now TuneIn is starting to do some programming that is what I think of as event programming, where they'll have a Garth Brooks channel, and they've got Garth's full participation in it, or they've got Tom Hanks doing Boss Radio 66, because Tom is such a fan of the music of that area, and it's his dream to do what you used to do, to be a flame throwing top 40 DJ.
I know he used to listen to me on KYA.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't doubt it. He was a fan of all of that. That's
yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah, I was on KYA when he was in high school. And I said, you know, I used to be a disc jockey in San Francisco because he grew up in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And I said, I was Beaver Cleaver. And he goes, Beaver Cleaver, KYA, Boss of the Bay. I used to listen to you at night.
That's hilarious. He's such a genuine fan of things that he's a genuine fan of. It's so fun to see him geek out with people like you or some local TV person that he's a fan of or whatever, because he's so sincere. It's great.
Yeah. Back in our day, one of the advantages of listening to Top 40 radio is that we were introduced to new music. That's how we learned about various groups and various trends. How do kids today find new music?
TikTok. That's certainly one of the prime ways. YouTube ranks right up there, probably even bigger than TikTok. YouTube, in effect, is a way to get a radio station for you, because it's going to use the algorithms to, if you listen to a Cardi B song, bring up another song that it thinks you will like, according to the statistics you would like. They're finding it primarily through social media and streaming apps like that. YouTube is so enormous, as you know, in every possible way. I mean, YouTube, talk about a monopoly. I mean, that is the number of hours of viewing slash listening that people do to YouTube right this moment, or the number of hours. It's like 100,000 hours of video gets uploaded every day to YouTube. I'm pulling that out of my, you know what, but it's a number like that. It may be low. YouTube is so enormous. And I think what you're finding with audio is that young people today like the video component being there as well. So they may not look at their phones or whatever their screen is all the time that they're listening, but they like having that option. So podcasters and streamers and others are slowly but surely moving more and more towards, okay, if we're going to do a podcast, let's give them some visuals that they can at least glance at. If we're going to be talking about some statistical thing, let's show them the pie graph, or let's show them a picture of the fashion that we're talking about, or whatever.
So if I'm a new artist and I have a song, do I have to make a music video in order to upload my song? And when I do upload my song and I'm 5 minutes of the 100,000 hours that gets updated that day, how do people find me?
Well, that has always been the question to some degree, but when you go back to the old days you were talking about, the gatekeepers who were the program directors, music directors, and to some degree the disc jockeys of those days would make those decisions as to what was going to be put out there, under influence, of course, sometimes literally, of the record companies. So there was a whole thing going on there that still exists today, and they're still promoting music to radio stations and trying to get airplay. But for the most part, things just get found and friends share them. And because they like something, it travels farther and more people see it and more people see it. It's all an electronic algorithm sort of a thing. I was having an interesting discussion with my kids the other day where they told me that if a video on TikTok, even if they liked it, personally liked it, not the physical act of liking, giving it that like on TikTok, they didn't want to be among the first 20,000 or whatever to do that.
God, no.
No.
God,
because
no.
That's embarrassing that you would like something that most people hadn't yet liked. That's risky.
And you would think it would be the opposite. You would think it would be, I'm so cool.
Right.
Find things before other people.
Right. No, not at least not with my kids. Now, my kids are probably lemmings, but that's an interesting topic for another focus group.
Your kids are kids of America.
They are, and they're getting their... The other thing that's happening a lot with new music is what matters is new to them. So I will be amazed many times. Some song will come on the radio when I've got the radio on, or I'll put a song on Alexa. I won't say her name to annoy everybody. And they will recognize a 20, 30, 40-year-old song many times, because they've been exposed to it through TikTok, through YouTube, through a movie soundtrack, perhaps, whatever. They don't care how old it is. And in fact, if anything, it annoys them slightly that I know it, because that takes a little bit of the cool away from Kate Bush running up that hill, the classic example that was in the TV show Stranger Things and had a whole second life 30 years after its first release and gave her a whole new career. They love that song, or they did last year. It's done now. And they're finding this stuff regardless of era. So this is one reason that you see formats. You're asking about popular formats. This is one reason that you see things like classic rock stations continue to endure after many of the artists have passed away, and at a point when much of the audience, a majority of the audience, wasn't born when those songs first came out and were on the radio the first time.
Interesting. You know, we would have the top 40, and the top 40 would be based on sales, going to record stores and buying the records. I guess today, most of the sales, maybe 95% of the sales, is downloading, right?
Yeah. It's for a physical sale, yes, but that doesn't happen very much anymore, because why download something when you can just listen to it?
And how do the artists make money?
They get paid. They get not well. And that's certainly been a bone of contention from the artists, that, but they get pennies for, or a fraction of a penny for every listen on YouTube or on streaming.
Oh, for every listen.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess if they rise to a certain level of prominence, they can start touring.
Yes.
And they make money off the touring.
The touring and the merch, and they pretty much have to do that these days to make a living. Of course, again, back to those artists whose music became popular years ago, they're used to that. And having run a classic rock station here in LA for a time, it would be one of the frustrations that would come up in conversations with those artists, whether it was a Graham Nash or a Steve Miller or whomever, who would say, why don't you play my music that I'm still making on the radio? Why don't you put it on the radio? It's just as good as what I made in 1971. And that's just not what those formats are there to do. They play the oldies.
Hmm. Yep. Let's talk about podcasting for a few minutes, because that's where the real money is.
I can
tell you. And the reason that the money is there, it's low-hanging fruit, is because there are so few podcasts. There's mine and I think three others.
Yes. And they're all sponsored by your sponsor, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. How many podcasts are there these days? Do we get another 100,000 podcasts that drop, you know, every day?
Yeah. You know what? It is starting to taper off. There's something like 2 million plus, probably more, in existence. But when you look at just the active ones that people like yourself are putting effort into and putting out a regular cadence of episodes, you're down into six figures somewhere. That's plenty, of course. The barrier to entry for podcasting, as you know, is low. You can order, and this is one of the frustrations in the business that I'm in of producing podcasts, is explaining people the value of having even a producer, because you can order a couple of microphones online and plug them into your computer and be putting up podcasts for the whole, that'll be on everybody's phones and everybody's computers that they can listen to. You can get that done in just a few days. But the two issues in podcasting are exactly what you just mentioned. Discoverability is what the term usually is that's used, is how are people going to discover these podcasts? And that's where a consolidation around some of the bigger studios, whether it's Amazon with their own platform and their investment in Wondery, or Spotify gobbling up a whole bunch of talent, although that has ended. Those networks, if you will, of podcasts where they can promote other podcasts on their network within the podcast that they have. That's one solution to discoverability, but that obviously doesn't work for everybody, because you're going to have to get picked up, number one. And number two, they probably have a lot of other podcasts to promote on that network. And you can get lost in a sea of things, even within a network. And then the other issue besides discoverability is the monetization, as you were also talking about. Out on the long tail, where you don't have the listenership the size of a Joe Rogan or a Pod Save America or New York Times The Daily, when you're out there with some listeners, 10,000 or more per episode, something like that, you can do some monetization, but you're not going to get rich until you get mass numbers. And with so many choices, it's hard to get the big numbers.
Even getting 10,000 people is pretty difficult.
Sure.
I would imagine for most of the podcasts out there that their audience is 4, 6, 18, something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's true. Yeah, it's true, especially for the hobbyists. But moving past that hobbyist sort of level is very difficult, no matter how much effort you put into it. Yeah. You know, there's a new service that is interesting. I think it has potential. They're working out some bugs called Podroll, where podcasters can do two things. They can offer up a sampling of another podcast in their own post roll. So you want to promote Hollywood and Levine in other podcasts, you can go through their list of podcasts and say, okay, for 6.5 cents per listener, I'll put myself in your post roll after your podcast is done. And that gets some sampling and maybe you get some long-term listeners from that. Or you can go the other direction and be one of the podcasters who allows others to pay you to put you in post roll. People are starting to get creative doing some things like that because discoverability is very tough.
What's helped me is going on other podcasts.
Oh, good.
And yeah. Being a guest on other podcasts. Mm-hmm. And people hear me and they go, oh, this clown sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
See what he has to offer.
I need to have something to promote today and I don't. So I don't have my own podcast other than the ones I produce for other people. But yeah, that's smart because you have eliminated the waste in that you're talking when you guest on those other podcasts, you're listening to podcast, you're talking to podcast listeners. So if you were to buy a billboard on the side of the 405 or something, why, you know, 1/3 of the folks who drive past that in theory will have listened to a podcast in the past week and are podcast listeners, but you'd be paying for a lot of people that you just don't have a shot with.
You consult podcasts. What are some common mistakes that neophyte podcasters make?
I would say, you know, I approach that a little bit as a former radio person, where there's always the threat for real-time tune-out. And so I spent many years trying to keep people in their seats past a 8-minute commercial break or what have you. And I think podcasting could use a little bit more of that philosophy or what it brings you. On the other hand, there are many parts of radio that don't transfer to podcasting, but we won't go into that. But for example, telling a story that is a long story, that the punchline, the point of the story is not going to happen for 10, 15 minutes. You're asking a lot of people to, in this day and age of low attention spans, of short attention spans, to sit through a lot of content to get to the first payoff. I think I'm using radio as an example, but you could also use stand-up comedy or any field where it's like, if you're going to get up and tell jokes in front of people, not every podcast is full of jokes, but if you're going to have a payoff for people and get in front of them and ask for their time to get to the payoff, you get good at figuring out how to get from point A to point B in the shortest amount of time so that people don't get bored and they actually make it to the destination of that story. There's a lot of that. People turn on the microphones and then 45 minutes later, turn them off without any real pressure on themselves to use that time wisely within, or if you're not going to do that, having somebody go through and take out the tangents.
Now, I did a podcast 3 years ago, which I'm actually going to repeat next week. And the podcast was me and another wonderful improviser, Aoife Cardy. And we created the single worst podcast ever.
I heard that. It was hilarious. It was great. It's one of your favorite, my favorite episodes of yours.
Yeah. So I'm going to repeat that next week because it's been 3 years and, you know, that's, you know, I'm entitled to a rerun once in a while. But yeah, it was fun to try to pick out as many annoying things that that podcasts do. And then the audience can figure out, well, how many of them do I do normally anyway?
Right, exactly. You're certainly not claiming to be innocent of some of those things. The I loved your transitions to the commercials. You would find a way to get into the commercials sometimes by transitioning out of your other content that was really good.
You know, one thing I love about commercials on the podcast, they used to do this in radio, but don't anymore, is live reads. You know, because, and it's very smart, I think, for the sponsor.
Yeah.
Because you can personalize it. And it also becomes programming if you make it fun.
Yes.
And I've never done a 1 minute commercial in only 1 minute.
Right. They're getting their money's worth.
Yeah. Yeah. And radio used to do that a lot. So again, if a station like KHJ is playing 12 minutes of commercials an hour and four of those are the real Don Steele doing live reads and throwing in interjections and things like that, then it's like only 8 minutes of commercials.
Absolutely. And radio has actually gone to more of that lately. I was one of the guys back in my days there who was kind of nervous about, oh, gee, you know, how many different clients, how many different commercials are we going to let one of our DJs do? And how many of those live read DJ things are we going to put in a commercial break? Because they'll all start to sound the same. Blah, 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 blah. You know what? I was wrong. They are far more entertaining than a pre-recorded shouting car dealer or whatever, or a repetitive. So many of the, even the humorous ads that are well-written 60s and 30s pre-recorded, they repeat so often. And that's where things like, now I'll be critical of TuneIn. The third time you hear a Home Depot commercial in the same commercial break, and it's the same Home Depot commercial, you're out of there. But those live reads are very entertaining, and there is research to back that up, that people actually do prefer those. Listeners,
now, back in the 60s, maybe the most successful disc jockey, certainly on Top 40 radio in terms of ratings, was Dan Ingram on WABC. And he used to do live reads, and he would make fun of the sponsors.
And, for no extra charge.
Yeah, and his commercials were the most entertaining part of the show.
Yeah.
And I guess the sponsors liked it, the ones that stayed with him, because A, it made an impression.
Right.
And B, it made the sponsor seem like a good sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably that sponsor had customers who would walk into their store or car dealership or what have you and repeat what Dan Ingram said and be laughing about it. And at that point, if they were miffed when they listened, they realized that it worked, that they were getting effectiveness from those ads.
You mentioned podcasts. Are they still on the rise, or you say they've kind of tapered off? Are they going to go with the way of the blog?
Well, to some degree, I think. I think there was a time when podcasts were, maybe still are, but it's waning, a fad. But what's being left behind is a definite trend. It makes logical sense, if you look at it objectively, that spoken word content delivered in an on-demand digital way, so you can start and stop and choose what you want and all of that, that's not going anywhere. That's a long-term trend that is obvious. But there was a time when, and FM radio had this, and so did AM radio. There was a time when it really captured the zeitgeist and was, remember 45, it was 45 years ago this summer that the movie FM came out, 1978. You think about that now and go, all right, that was probably like the peak of FM as a part of, as a medium, as part of pop culture, that they would do a mainstream sort of, to be oxymoronic, counterculture movie about how cool FM is, and that an FM station wanted to not be corporate. And it was a terrible script and not a great movie, to tell you the truth, but that they even made it. And it had a good soundtrack. Thank you, Steely Dan and others. Shows you that that was the peak. The fad eventually wanes, and FM's been around ever since and continues. And despite what we're saying here, it's not going away anytime soon. AM may be another story. And I think podcasts are moving from being just from being a fad to being a long-term trend. Will there be as many as a trend, as many of the hobbyists and people who just jump in and say, I'm going to do a podcast? No, but there will still be plenty of podcasts for people to consume. And it's a growing business. The revenue is going to be there in the hands, as is the case of many industries, in the hands of a concentrated few, but it's growing.
Yeah, I've been doing it now. This is my seventh year.
Wow.
Every good week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Do you find that your blog, I know you discontinued doing that day to day. That became a chore, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Podcast has not.
Mostly not.
Good. Today.
No, but no, mostly not. I enjoy it. It gives me a chance to sort of keep my hand in broadcasting. And I love doing the interviews. I love talking to interesting people and learning a lot from interesting people. So to me, like, this has been a joy to be able to sit and talk to you and glean all this information has been a joy. So yeah, and I don't have to write anything.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that, and that is a much bigger chore even for a writer. Did it, you know, I consider, not on your level, but in other ways, I consider myself a writer, and people will ask me, do you enjoy writing? Not really. I think I'm pretty good at it. Did you ever really just enjoy the act of writing?
I enjoy parts of it, yes. When I'm working on a script and it's going well and ideas are coming,
yeah,
then yeah, I'm, you know, kind of in that zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But believe me, there are plenty of days when I don't, and I always maintain for young writers that what they pay you for in television is not only your talent, but the fact that you have to create on demand.
Right.
Okay. You can't wait for the muse to capture you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a cold, if you've had a fight with your wife, you know, if the actors are giving you problems, if you're next to the sawmill, you know, you have to just keep plowing forward and being creative. So
right. Yeah. But that brainstorming aspect of it, where it's fun because the ideas are flowing. Well, yes, mm-hmm. that's the part I enjoy too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just needs to happen more often.
Damn it.
Well, Dave, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ken.
Appreciate it. This has been an awful lot of fun. I wish I had parting gifts. I have Vicky Carr's It Must Be Him album.
I think I'll just catch that on the stream. Thank you.
You know, well, it's analog.
Yeah, that's true. There's some analog nostalgia there. That's true. I don't even have a record player anymore, a turntable, as they say. But
yeah,
when I get one,
business is, you know, making phonograph needles.
Wow.
That's a business.
You know, I had a guy, he's talking about all these changing technologies and businesses and so forth. There was a consultant that we used to work with who said to me one day, he said, you know what? People talk about how something is going the way of the stagecoach. There are more stagecoaches being manufactured today than at any time in history. If you want to make stagecoaches, you can make stagecoaches. So there you go. I mean, same with vinyl and phonograph needles and so forth. There's a demand for anything. And if you're good at it, I think you can do it.
And they're my big sponsor, Acme Stagecoaches.
I thought maybe it was colon blow.
Only on the weekends. Only if you listen to the podcast on the weekends.
Whether you need it or not, once a week. Thank you, Ken.
He was a fun guest, I must admit. Dave Biesing, longtime radio programmer. Hope you enjoyed that. And that concludes our two-part interview. And next week, as I mentioned, I am going to replay that episode from my podcast from several years ago now. It is the worst podcast ever. How can you pass up a chance to listen to that? Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, to Howard Hoffman, to Bruce and Jason Miller, and John Wolfert. My email address, just in case you want to say hello, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I'm also available on Instagram, where you can check out my New Yorker cartoons. So come back next week for the worst podcast ever. Right here on
Hollywood and Levine.